Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
So what we're going to do on the BWI Daily Edition is I'm going to throw the intro. I'm going to be doing all of those things. But basically, Nate and I are just going to pick up the conversation we were having before the camera started rolling. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. We're talking Penn State and Northwestern. The Nittany Lions got a sloppy, ugly throwback win 17-7. We are breaking everything down from the game now that we have had over 2 days, I guess, at this point to digest all of it and to come to our conclusions. That's coming up on the BWI Daily Edition. Did you catch the fear in my eyes, Nate, that I did the math wrong on how many hours it had been? Of like, it's been 48 hours. Has it been 48 hours? I don't know.
I can't do that. That's way above my pay grade. And you're doing it on camera. So the fact that we were just digging into off camera Penn State's running game and all of the ins and outs of that, and then you so quickly, just on a dime, turned it into, hey Nate, we gotta go, let's go.
I have few skills. One of them is I'm a constant procrastinator, so working on a hard deadline, I've developed that skill over the years. So as long as I'm not in a pure panic mode, we're good to go. Anything is a transition, including my ADHD, which we're going to talk about in just a little bit, because we're going to talk about the Penn State Northwestern game and how we were 3 seconds away from having going on air. And, you know, we're having a conversation about the game. So let's just pick up where we were. We're going to start somewhere else in the whole plan thing we were going to do. But you were saying off air, it's not like Penn State didn't move the football, right? Offensively, we're starting with the offense. It's not like they didn't move the football.
I think that certainly the offense garners our attention usually more than other things, right? And so when you look at this game, at least from my perception, and I think that the perception of most fans who saw the game, it's, you know, this, oh my goodness. It's just so painful to watch. But I don't know that that's necessarily true. That's the instinct and that's the initial reaction, whether in person watching the game or certainly on TV in the moment. But my point to you and what I think I would say right now is Penn State could only, for either team, right, in those weather conditions, you could only do one thing with any degree of certainty, and that was to run the ball. And my major takeaway is that Penn State, for the most part, did. For the most part, they were able to run the ball. Like, even with Northwestern knowing exactly what they were going to do, Penn State, for the most part, you make a great point, and you will make a great point. I don't want to steal your thunder. They didn't hit home runs, but were they able to chew off 4 or 5 yards at a time? The issue being, they kept turning it over.
I had to push back. I was going to push back on that. They could reliably run the football. They could reliably set up a run play, but they had no idea whether the ball was going to stick with the team by the end of said run play.
As opposed to Northwestern, who could not run the ball, right? Who was getting tackled behind the line of scrimmage by Penn State's defense. It was a Penn State offense that was making positive gains more or less with a telegraphed intention of running the ball. That was, everybody in the stadium knew what was going to happen on the next play, but Penn State was still sort of able to do that anyway.
So, there's so many different places to start with this, because
get into, you know, it. Go
watching the film today, and this game film shaved years of my life off watching it, because there was so much. Like, it wasn't necessarily that it was good or that it was bad, and it wasn't even that there was a lot of plays. They've run more than 78 plays. It was just so dense from the run game perspective. So the plan coming in was a good one. And that's what I tried to highlight in my film study of, I thought they did a lot of really smart things of how they were breaking tendencies, going at the Northwestern schematic discipline, like their plan of how they play defense and trying to break it, trying to use those rules to break the defense. And they got a lot of good looks, but they didn't get what they wanted. Nick Singleton, one-on-one with a safety, and he runs through and or by that guy for 40 plus yards. He ripped off runs of 10, 10, 19, and then he went to the bench. So yeah, the plan never had a chance to really work. Now that can be your, critique of the plan that, well, your plan never worked, but that's the thing that you mentioned. Everyone knew they're going to run the football. Everyone knew that as the game went on and conditions didn't get any better at any point in the first half, mm-hmm, you kind of shoot all those. You spend the clip, you know, you empty the clip. And then in the third quarter, it's just like, okay, what plays worked? What are we going to adjust to? And when you run 51 or 58 run plays, eventually you're going to repeat yourself and you're just running plays. Like, you're just going to start running plays. So the grind of the third quarter was as much my opinion in the moment was, they just want to get out of here. Shorten the game. You have the lead. Northwestern can't come back. So let's shorten the game and get out of here. And that's how you get to that many runs with that level of effectiveness.
Yeah. I'm looking at the drive chart right now. In the second half, the first possession, 12 plays for 42 yards over six minutes, 19 seconds until a fumble.
Yep.
Right. It just kept happening. I think that was the Kevon Lee fumble, I believe, was that one in the third quarter, because Catron Allen, who was somewhat of a bright spot, I thought, for the Penn State's offense in the running game in the second half, after very clearly he served some sort of suspension in the first half, was able to come into the game and had some success, but even he was not unsusceptible.
Immune.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Great. Live TV. You know, from what was happening to everybody else, which was just putting the ball on the ground. I mean, I know what your comments were, and certainly I understand where James Franklin was coming from after the game, talking about how it's not an excuse. The weather's the weather and you just got to play through it. And I get it. I get all of that stuff, but
yeah,
you know, sometimes stuff happens, and sometimes, you know, it felt to me, and I'll be actually be interested to get your opinion on this. It felt to me like the ones that happened on Saturday were a combination of, yes, ball security issues, but also plays being made by Northwestern, also the ball being slippery.
Yeah. So Northwestern got a hat on the ball. Right. And that's where James Franklin is talking about the weather isn't an excuse, because you got to run behind your pads. You got to know that a team's going to come after you once they smell blood in the water, once they feel like they can get the ball out, and the ball being slippery. So Northwestern made plays. Right. So that's a thing. Stephen Light here on the channel says, carrying that ball like a loaf of bread. I would crush the bread if I were carrying it like a football. But I get what you mean. It's very important. It's absolutely critical. I hope they're not doing the whole carrying a football around until we don't need more Jahan Dotsons out there carrying football everywhere they go. Yeah. But it is a combination of those factors. You're correct. And it's a fascinating place where we get to, because, you know, Wayback wants us to talk about Sean Clifford right away. And we're going to talk about Sean Clifford. There's no way we cannot talk about Sean Clifford. But the story of the game was fumbles.
Yep.
That, plain and simple. And that's what David was saying earlier when we had his conversation up on the message board here, saying, you know, if it weren't for the fumbles, they would have scored 24 points in the game and it wouldn't have felt as bad. You would take 24 points in a rainstorm. And I think that's pretty fair. In fact, we'll get to David's point here. Penn State had success with screens and sweeps. They went away in the second half. Why isn't Mike Yurcich making it easier on Clifford with simpler reads, quick throws into space for athletes to make plays? That is a loaded question, believe it or not, David. I think you bring up a good point of just call a play. Call a play. Don't have it be an RPO. Don't let there be an option on the play. have it be designed quick screen to Parker Washington, because there were a lot of throws that weren't made in this game because Clifford was choosing other things on the play, whether it's the read option and him not keeping the ball or not throwing the ball in the RPO. So there's a little bit of Mike Yurcich going into the game plan, dialing up deep plays a lot. Those are the ones that were called of straight passes, and then a lot of RPOs in there
that they couldn't hit on the deep passes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, they tried, they gave it a shot, but just the connections were not there.
We're doing it again. We're doing it again, David. I appreciate it. And part of this is that it's the most interesting thing, right? If it bleeds, it leads. And the Penn State offense is a wounded animal right now, but
you ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I wanted to start this show talking about the defense. We're 10 minutes in because they have been flagrantly overlooked in this entire situation. Before we do that, though, I need to tell everybody it's the BWI Daily Edition. Appreciate you being here. It's the live Monday show. Nate Bauer and myself are going to be recapping the game. We're going to get through all the stuff, not just Sean Clifford in the run game. I think some big themes are starting to officially emerge for this team of not only identity, but storylines that Nate and I are going to follow throughout the season. And we need your help. First off, there are 25 likes on the video, and I got my like warriors in here with Mike and JoeBot like an hour before the video was live. They're up here giving the video likes. So be like JoeBot, be like Mike, and give the... We've been telling you to be like Mike since the 90s. So just like the video. It's super appreciated.
I'm going to like it right now. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Once I'm done with my spiel, you need to have it done by then. The second thing is subscribe to our YouTube channel. We are growing we're up and up and up like a rocket ship. And it's a tastefully shaped rocket ship. So you don't have to be embarrassed by that. But we need you to help us out by subscribing to Blue White Illustrated, telling your friends about Blue White Illustrated so we can grow our channel. So now that I got that out of the way, let's talk about the defense.
Yeah.
What were your impressions about how they performed in that game?
Yeah, they're great. They're great. Look, I don't know why this is. I just always end up in the middle, right? And so for all of the conversation that I'm going to have about the offense not being that bad, I'm going to have an offsetting conversation about the defense. Not that they're not that good. It's that the offenses that they've played, right? I cannot help but come away from that game and say, man, Northwestern. Yeah. Man, you stink. you just bad plays that were there to be made. Because I think again, and you saw that on both sides of the ball. So I don't want to be too harsh, because certainly in the passing game, there were catches that could have been made by both sides. But I thought in particular, Northwestern had issues there with drops, certainly. But also because
they actually tried to throw the football.
Because they did. They did.
And they had to.
They tried to throw the football. I didn't think that the running game... Look, Penn State knew what to stop, right? That was the one thing that Northwestern, with their running back, sort of had maybe something going coming into the game that just never materialized once they actually got into it. Can Penn State be as fast and aggressive and ferocious, instinctive as they are against Northwestern in future games?
Can they do it against Michigan?
Can they do it against Michigan?
It was the question I was getting during the game from people. It's like, can we not have nice things, Nate? I get what you're saying. Absolutely. 100% agree with what you're saying.
I don't,
but it's amazing.
Yeah. No, I don't want to do that either. Don't take away. You can only play the opponent that's in front of you. And so the opponent that was in front of Penn State on Saturday was not very good at playing football, and Penn State maximized its opportunity defensively against that and did all it needed to do. I did think that there were a few lapses in the second half in particular. Early fourth quarter, Northwestern had an opportunity to make that a 17-14 game. The fact that Northwestern, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody did talk about it. It felt like to me that they could have kicked a field goal there at the 1 yard line. They went for the touchdown. It wasn't a do or die necessarily situation for Northwestern. But certainly Penn State was opportunistic. That was the word that just rang true to me throughout the game, is Penn State's defense. Whenever Penn State, the team needed a boost, the defense was there and and was able to pick it up.
Yeah. So here is the point, I guess, I want to make about the defense. And you mentioned the opponent in front of you. Northwestern had one thing, right? They had one thing they were good at. And I described it leading in the game on Friday. They're good at running between the tackles, not even running outside the tackles, not even a diverse running game. They didn't have speed options and guys that could get jet sweeps and a quarterback that can run. They had Hull and Porter on, combo blocks going up the middle. And that offensive line coordinated, working well together as a unit. Penn State systematically dismantled it. Like, there was no option for the Northwestern offense. And that's the part that I think, coming into this game, if we said we wanted to learn one thing about this team from the game, is can they stop a well-trained group and make them look bad? And they made them look silly. Like, Peter Skoronski was the headliner of that group. He had a terrible game because it was forced upon him by that group. And the questions about, can they hold up in the middle with the defensive tackles? Are they too small? A run first team, blah, blah. And then, like, this is the conversation I had. And I put this tweet out yesterday. Like, PJ Mustfer is back, was what I said. And what I mean is, he had a vintage game of PJ Mustfer, 8 tackles, disruptive. I don't know if he's 100% healthy, but he had that game again. And the first reply was, well, what about against Michigan, who have bigger? And it's like, we keep moving the goalposts.
Yeah.
They were supposed to take care of business. They allowed 13 yards on the first 5 drives. Are you kidding me? Not 13 points, 13 yards. Let's stop and appreciate that before we ask about Michigan. And I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the conversation around the defense.
I can't disagree. I mean, I'm looking at these comments. I don't think you are right now, but Penn State won a game that it was miserable to be at. I think it was probably miserable to participate in by just shutting it down. I mean, it almost felt like an older brother with a younger, right? Like, with the hand out and the wild swinging, just
playing somebody who's never played Madden before, and you win like 99-17.
But 17-7 is the same thing. It doesn't really matter. You're not really necessarily even paying attention. I don't think that Penn State did that necessarily, but you could, there were some elements of that game in which the smart move, the patient, the confident move was to just let Northwestern make the mistake and to just let Northwestern do what it was doing, which was not much of anything against the Penn State defense. Like, it's always so funny to me because there's such a throwback element of Penn State's fan base that loves old time stuff
and nostalgia,
and they got it. They got a game where it was just, hey, let the defense win for you. Let the defense do it for you. And then Penn State does that. And James Franklin is, the villain in this. And Mike Yurcich, like, it's just
all the bad plays were James Franklin.
It's funny. It is what it is.
I had that same conversation post game. I had the same conversation Sunday morning on our message board thread. I had the same conversation with some people here. It's like, Gladiator, are you not entertained? This is other than having a literal fullback with a neck roll. And they've got, by the way, Brent Strange is 250 pounds. So he's bigger than most fullbacks of at least, you know, my generation. I don't know if you had 270 pound fullbacks back in the day, but like, he's a big dude and he plays fullback essentially. So it's all there. You had the whole thing you wanted. I just think that like there's a certain group of people that it's like, well, it was better in the 90s because it was better in the 90s. But anyway, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about that. We got to get some of these questions.
Yeah. Let's
I don't really want to talk about this one.
Do you I want to talk about is it.
Influencing Mike Yersich's plays.
Can no.
you please. Thank you. Perfect. Do you have an elaboration?
Yeah. Look, well, first of all, you can read his lips, okay? When you actually go back and watch the TV, you can see some of the things that he is saying. But he's also talked about it for the last 9 years, which is very simply that Franklin makes their directives in terms of overall strategy. If he feels like they're getting away from the run, right, which is a thing that happens sometimes with Mike Yersich, he will try to steer them back towards that. If he thinks it's in both directions, it's offense and defense, but there are suggestions that are made. He does things in terms of, oh, you have two plays to work with here, right?
Yep.
Third downs, where he says, hey, you got two plays, you can pick up a chunk of yardage without worrying about getting the first down because we're going to go for it on fourth down. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the types of influences that he has. Whereas I get the sense that people think James Franklin is saying, Mike, you're out on this one. We're going to do X spider, whatever that stupid John Gruden, right?
Spider to Y banana.
He's not doing that. He's not doing that. It's just painfully clear that that is not what the relationship and the dynamic is. And guess what? Mike Yersich would not have come to Penn State if that was the case.
Yeah. He's definitely yelling, get somebody out of the game with expletives after a fumble. I did read his lips that way. Here's a question getting back to the defense. Is it good that we don't really hear the linebackers' names because of the D-line tackling, or are they making plays, King and Elsden? What has been your impression of that group, you know, last week, but their progression so far this season?
I don't know that I have an opinion, to be honest with you. And I guess that kind of speaks to the question, which is there aren't a lot of memorable plays that I feel like they've been in on. I think that some of the conversation that existed before the season about how important Curtis Jacobs is specific to Manny Diaz's defense has borne fruit. That has played out. Not that the Mike linebacker is not an important position. I think that it is, but it's not as integral or as noticeable as certainly what Curtis Jacobs has done this season. I noticed when they got hurt, right? I noticed that Tyler Elsden had a shoulder, and I'm not really quite sure what happened to Kobe King, but I didn't think that either of them, all of the splash plays are coming from other places. Put it that way.
Yeah. So in a lot of ways, what this defense does is it sets up things for somebody else. So you're slanting your defensive tackles one way so that the offensive line will react to that, and then your linebackers can come free to shoot the gap, right? Or you are blitzing your Mike linebacker to give your Will linebacker a better clean run at the football. So there's a lot of selfless play up front. And you need to have guys that are willing to do that. Now, I'm sure Manny Diaz could design a play for a Mike linebacker and not for a Will. But the way that they set things up, it seems at least at this point, the Mike is making a lot of those run there, take the bullets, let somebody else get through.
Yeah.
I do want to say this, because this is something that has bothered me for a little bit. And now that I've seen 5 games, I feel more confident saying this. There has been a long discussion about the best linebacker lineup, right? And it has to be some combination of Carter, King and Jacobs, because King is clearly more athletic than Tyler Elsden. And while that may be true, there, it's not an incorrect statement. We need to stop pretending like Kobe King is fast, because he's not. You know, if we're labeling guys as fast or not fast, and we're using Abdul Carter, Curtis Jacobs, those guys are fast, Kobe King is much closer of an athlete to Tyler Elsden. And I think that was pretty evident on a couple of those plays where Evan Hull got free because you had a Mike linebacker chasing him from the middle of the field. They started in the same spot, and they did not end up in the same spot. So this conversation, I think we need to add some context to it of knowing what Kobe King is. He's going to be a good linebacker, but he's a much more closer to an Ellis Brooks than he is a Jason Kabinda, if that makes sense.
And that's okay. Ellis Brooks had a ton of success at Penn State. It fits what Penn State wants to do. So continue, Professor.
Yeah. These things to me are important because they provide the context and the nuance that are going to not matter to anyone who just wants to be angry about a linebacker giving up reception later when it's not Evan Hull in the rain for 10 yards and it's Travion Henderson for 25.
Which so. Is going to happen. I do think that there is I don't want to use the wrong, a storm is coming to a certain extent, right? Ohio State will have more success. Like, that was the main thing that I said on Sunday in my notebook was, hey, you got to get used to the idea. And this isn't a Penn State offense thing. This is a Penn State offense thing more than it is a Penn State defense thing. Penn State's offense needs to be better. They need to be more efficient. They need to score more points. They need to have more explosive plays because guess what? Penn State's defense can be as good as it's been and still give up 27 points against some of the teams that are coming on the schedule. So again, not trying to derail the conversation down the place that you don't want to take it. And I don't want to take it. Michigan, Ohio State, Minnesota, that's fine. But there just needs to be some sort of a realization that Penn State's defense is playing exceptionally well right now. It's only going to get better in terms of its understanding and instinctiveness of what Manny Diaz wants to do. Manny Diaz is the guy. He is exactly what Penn State had hoped he would be when they brought him in. He's instilled that and he's implemented that into that side of the ball. But there are just taller tasks coming than what they have faced so far.
Yeah, and the same thing I said last week is the same thing I said about this and what you just said in a nutshell. And first off, I appreciate you letting me stand on my soapbox and yell about the defense being good. Because it is important context that they're still going to be good later. Mm-hmm. The game script of the last two games was that the offense was frustrating and the defense had to do a lot of the heavy lifting and they had to be all of those things. So when Northwestern is, and by Penn State's doing of freshman being freshman for a hot second and denied Deniz Sutton getting a personal foul and then Abdul Carter getting a 5-yard offsides call extending drives, and Northwestern is going to get their 10th point of the game, maybe like for a field goal, maybe they get a touchdown and it's the fourth quarter. The reason you're upset about that is because the Penn State offense has not scored more than 7 points in any frame so far, and they've been given the ball 3 times.
Yep.
And it's the same thing as what happened with the Central Michigan game, and that'll be the problem going forward. It is not the defense. Even if they give up points, as long as they're still generating turnovers and they're giving you the opportunity at more possessions, they're doing their job.
Yep.
But that brings me to something that you said post-game that I thought was incredibly insightful. Uh-oh. The last two games starting a trend. How do you feel about that, given what we just said? Over 48 hours, because David did tell me it is over 48 hours later.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your comment now?
No, I think that there are some reasons for... But I mean, I'm going to say yes. There should be some reasons for concern or caution in that... certainly the explosiveness has not been there the past two games, I don't think. But how much of that is the weather? How much of that is just, slight not connecting situations. I thought that there were opportunities on Saturday that they just didn't hit. Whether that's Parker Washington screaming across the middle with five steps on his man and Sean Clifford overthrowing him. I feel like that happened maybe twice. I thought that the pass, you and I maybe disagree on this just a little bit, but I thought the pass to Trey Wallace in the back of the end zone from Sean Clifford was fine. It should have been caught under different circumstances, right? Like if it's not raining, you would expect him to catch that ball.
Trey Wallace makes those plays. That is what we've seen from him, right? Is every time we see him catch the football, it's over somebody's head and it's an impressive catch. And he didn't make that one.
Yeah. Just to go back just for a second, I just think that Penn State's defense is going to give up more yards. It's going to give up. It will start to give up some explosive play touchdowns, I think, which has been a tremendous asset to them so far this season that they haven't. But it's just about that opportunism. Can they create interceptions in timely moments? Can they create fumbles? Because if Trevion Henderson goes for, right, Blake Corum goes for 150 yards, but has two turnovers, two fumbles that Penn State forces, you got to be able to do something with that. You got to be able to make the most of that. And I think that that's kind of where this is heading. Is Blake Corum going to have three touchdowns, 150 yards, and no turnovers? Or is he going to have 150 yards, a touchdown, and two turnovers? Because those will be dramatically different games if they do.
Here's another thing. Even if it isn't a turnover, what if they just force 1-3 and out or two? Yep. So this is another part of the game from Saturday. Is Penn State forced, I think the first four drives were three and outs.
Five
drives, and one of them ended in an interception.
Yep.
You know, if they get one or two, and by the way, I think, you know, I need to do a deeper dive on Michigan. I've gotten a cursory look at them, and I wasn't super
impressed.
They're
good. I think they're good. I think they might be good. I was talking to some people this week. Yeah, some people this weekend. Good. Pretty good. I don't know. Good. Really very, for Michigan standards, I think pretty good. I think Michigan fans who see this team think, hey, they can do multiple things. There's a versatility to the offense that will probably allow them to be more successful than they were last year offensively.
Right. And if that's the case, that is a challenge. But if this is what I was just going to lead into, is last season against Michigan, they had a very good defense, but Penn State frustrated that offense for most of the day. And if Manny Diaz is able to do that and just get some three and outs, Penn State has to score points. And this is, David brings us to a great position, great transition here. By the way, David, donating to the channel. If you want to donate to the channel, super appreciate that. Anytime that you want to,
David's great. He donated to Sean and my show last week, and it was a bigger donation. So, Dave, many, many thanks.
Dave's a regular here, and I'm not trying to one-up Dave here, but I had to tell you this story on air. Somebody tried to donate $100 to the channel yesterday and kept donating a dollar and kept asking in the chat, how do I donate $100? So he never figured it out, Nate. And I have to ask you this question before we move on. Is that malpractice on my part that I didn't go live until he figured it out?
or at least give him your Venmo account.
Right?
Yeah.
I've made the joke that once again, somebody used the information from the show to hit big on a parlay or something. And it was just a little kickback. David says here, though, we'll get to this, the real thing happening right now. David says tight ends and running game are much better than last year. So why isn't the offense better this year? It seems Clifford execution, no real wide receiver one. What do you think, Nate? Is it anything on that list? Where is the breakdown?
I don't agree. I don't agree that the offense isn't better.
Okay. It wasn't better yesterday.
It wasn't
on
better.
The totality, you're saying this offense is better this year.
I have no question that this offense is better this year. I think that Nick Singleton hits home runs. I think Catron Allen is a better running back than they had last year. Like, you saying that the tight ends and running game are much better than last year means that the offense is better than it was last year. Sean Clifford is more or less the same. He is the quarterback that he was through the first five games last year before he got hurt. He's probably the same as he was against Michigan. He didn't have bad games against Michigan and Ohio State last year. Just a reminder. He did have some clunkers. Arkansas was no good. Illinois was no good. We understand all of that. But I'm just saying that if to me, it continues to be the case that Penn State's fatal flaw last year was that they had no offensive versatility. There was only one thing that they could do. It was Jahan Dotson, and they squeezed as much juice out of that as they possibly could. It took away other elements that were easily taken away by other defenses. This year, and you had this in our little rundown, but I want to hit this point. When Nick Singleton isn't hitting, you've got Catron Allen.
Yep.
When Tyler Warren being hurt or Theo Johnson being hurt, you've got Brenton Strange. When Mitch Tinsley doesn't catch a pass, you've got Parker Washington. I think that there is a serious conversation to be had about that third wide receiver. I think that you and I can both agree on that, that is something that is a slow moving train going off the tracks for Penn State.
Certainly hasn't gotten better. Yeah.
Right. But, Sean Clifford he continues to be the barometer player of when the pieces around him are going, he's going as well and is fine in that role. Penn State just has many, many more options of how they can beat you, including, again, when Northwestern knew exactly what was coming, what was happening, Penn State was still able to do, for the most part, effectively the element of the game that it was cornered into. It just had a problem with turning the ball over on Saturday.
And I think it's also fair to say this performance, when we talk about, I wanted to learn about the defense. Can they be way better? Can they be better than a decent offensive line, a decent run blocking offensive line?
Yeah.
Check. For the offense, what I wanted to see in this game in particular was, could they hit the deep ball against a secondary that gave up explosive plays all the time because of the system and the coverages that they run? James Franklin, and I made the comparison during the game, that this is very much like the Michigan State game last year. Mm-hmm. You are facing a terrible pass defense, and the elements are not going to let you throw the football with your quarterback. Could they have thrown the football with a different quarterback and, somebody with maybe a stronger arm, bigger hand, whatever it is that makes them feel confident about throwing or not throwing the football? Maybe. Yeah. We've seen other quarterbacks perform in that weather. But we've also seen James Franklin consistently say, the weather's bad. I don't want to turn the ball over. So we're going to run the football here. So I couldn't learn what I wanted to learn about the offense from this particular game. So that is a frustration, and that's where I think going back to some of these comments, like,
totally,
and I don't think David's wrong for wondering what the inconsistency issue has been over the last couple of weeks. And even going back to the first game of the season where they scored 35 points, but they came in bunches, like they did not come in a very easy way. But it's the rain to me there, because it limited what the game plan was going to be coming into the game.
I'm kind of monitoring some of the comments here. I think that there are extreme positions here that are being taken over something that is probably somewhere closer to the middle. And that includes talking about Michigan. I think they are better than they were last year. I don't think they were that good last year.
Yeah.
That's the caveat is, that was a playoff team that wasn't that explosive offensively. So, I mean, to say that they're better than they were last year means, that offensively, I think that they are better. I think they probably have taken a step back.
I think Penn State's kind of like Michigan last year at this point. Like, one of the things I'm learning about this team is Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins were the offense last year, right? And if they couldn't hit big runs, they were kind of sunk. What does that sound like? What team does that sound like? And losing Keandre Lambert-Smith, your most consistent deep threat early in the game, probably put a damper on that too. So having that third dimension, and Larry says that he thinks that the offense here is the same as last year. If you force JJ McCarthy to win the game, Penn State wins. That's the part I'm going to agree with, with terms and conditions apply. that I need to see more. I need to do more film study. I was not impressed with McCarthy and his vision and his sort of looked like he's peeing the pants in the pocket sort of thing, you know, when I watched him play football against UConn. But okay, that was a couple weeks ago. I was not fully engaged in actually watching the game. I was doing a couple other things. So I will tacitly agree with Larry here, but I need to make sure that I see more before I give a full T. Frank stamp of film approval.
Yep.
The theme of this offense, though, is kind of what I've noticed out of the first month of the season. That, yes, if they have to, Sean Clifford can throw the football 50 times. You'll get the results you get. And I think a lot of that was the offense around him making plays. Brenton Strange making plays. Keandre Lambert Smith making plays. But they need that explosive element to be a dynamic offense. And I don't think that that's anything that's, you know, earth shattering to say, but when it's gone, it's pretty noticeable. And I think it's also apparent that your hopes lie with a freshman. And the last couple weeks, Nick Singleton's played like a freshman, I think it's fair to say. So what's the trajectory from here, and how much growing do you think he can do in time for the next onslaught of games?
I haven't seen anything out of him that suggests that he's not equipped to handle these things, right?
Right.
Like, it just, the makeup is all there. I'm going to say the science, trust the background here, right? This kid has been built to overcome these mishaps. And so I think that the way that I saw him run on Saturday, it looked to me as though had he not fumbled the ball and stayed in the game and gotten more opportunities, one of those may have hit.
He would have finished with 175 yards. I think that's fair.
I mean, are you kidding or not? Because I would say maybe he could have. I don't know.
No, I'm serious. He had 76 at halftime, and they ran the ball 50 times. If he's in the game, I know that Catron Allen played in the second half, but he missed the entire third quarter and finished with 82, I think.
There was this conversation about how, he's going to sit for the rest of the game. And on our message board, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, they can't do that. They can't put him on the bench for the rest of the game. And I mean, they did put him on the bench until, you know, midway to late in the fourth quarter.
They ran out of spots on the bench is the problem. Everyone fumbled. They had to recycle rejected running backs. Like, I thought they were going to just go five wide.
to me, there's a little bit of stubbornness in that, though. In that, I understand what you're trying to do and send a message and ball security. I get all of that for sure. But at the same time, when so much of your offense is predicated on that specific piece doing what he does, I don't understand. It feels to me as though you're hampering the rest of the offense when you take that piece away, even though understandably there was very obviously some frustration there, warranted frustration with turning the ball over when you're moving the ball. Three of those five turnovers were on Northwestern's side of the field. They were moving the ball. They had opportunities that they probably would have turned into points had those turnovers not happened, but they did.
So. Yep. And I don't know if this is fair or not, which is why I'm hesitating here, but
he also
fumbled a third time. It just wasn't called a fumble.
That's true too.
At a certain point, I think James Franklin made the calculus of he might get us a touchdown, but he could give them a touchdown at this. Like, it's 50-50 at this point. And I think you're absolutely correct about everything about Nick Singleton. I think, you know, the maturity, what he's shown to be in this moment to begin with. But we're seeing, I just think, the realities of youth, right? Yeah. And he is making up for mistakes and correcting them on the fly. I see things of he bounces something he shouldn't have. The next play, he sticks his foot in the ground and gets 9 yards running through a linebacker. So the growth is happening in real time. It's just the question of, does the growth come at a moment where you need it? And that's going to be obviously the next three games. They're absolutely going to need him to be playing like a veteran Yeah. Or at least hitting. You know what? I'll take that back.
I don't think he needs to play like a veteran. I think he needs to play like a home run hitter. That's it. And guess what? I understand some of the hesitation with this, but look, that's how you win. Is him doing that. If he does it, then you win. And if he doesn't, and the argument is, oh, well, Penn State doesn't have another route to do that against the best competition, so be it. You lose that game. That you're not enough. Like, you don't have enough offensively to be able to do that. And I think that there's probably an argument to be made that they don't have enough. Yeah. There is no insurance policy in terms of having two Nick Singletons. There is no Saquon Barkley on the bench. Yeah. But they can be are there options to being a productive, somewhat efficient offense without Nick Singleton hitting home runs? Sure.
Yep.
But
yep.
this is how it's going to have to be done for them to get where they want to go against the type of teams that they're about to face.
I was reading something in the offseason, and it was about comparing to what's reasonable and comparing to the objective perfection, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea of comparing something to what is the best possible version. And I think that's mm-hmm. where a lot of us, and I'm guilty of this as I literally did it on the channel here, is what's the best possible version of this offense? Mm-hmm. What is the path where they have enough explosiveness around it that everything else works? And the key cog is Nick Singleton. Like, he can't have an off day. Mm-hmm. And that's probably unfair. That is unfair. Kent says, yeah, offense and defense is cool, but Barney Amore for Heisman. That dude has been awesome so far. And Nate, you called that. However, we don't. Once again, I'm going to drive right by punters because I promised several people we would talk about Sean Clifford. And we've talked around Sean Clifford. We've talked
about
all the things.
Yeah.
But 20 passes, Nate. 20
mm-hmm.
of them.
Mm-hmm.
And already in that game, it was time for Drew Aller. So mm-hmm. I think we're going to fall on opposite sides here. I will let you go first and state your opinion of how Sean Clifford played on Saturday.
I thought he was fine given the circumstances in the first half. I thought he didn't play very well in the second half. I thought he was impacted somewhat by Northwestern moving. And maybe I'm misremembering this, so correct me if I am. But it felt like Northwestern just kept getting closer to the line of scrimmage defensively. Is that okay?
Yeah, so they were cheating up most of the game because they weren't throwing the football. They just didn't throw the football. So why would you keep four deep?
So that impacted him. He didn't hit when he needed to hit. There were opportunities. It was a combination of things. It's always the same conversation, right? Is that I think that the hate that he gets is too far in one direction. I don't really hear many people defending him and pounding their chests for like Sean Clifford devotion. I don't see that out there. And I understand why that is, but I think that it's probably somewhere closer to the middle in terms of where his actual performances are, because he has made mistakes. He has done things that, you know, certainly you don't want to have happen. He should have had more interceptions than he did on Saturday. The one went straight through number nine's hands. I mean, it could have been a pick, whatever that was, second quarter.
Yep.
So was it good? No. Does he need to probably run more? Yes. My issue is the certainty of Drew Aller being
the alternative. Right.
I don't understand the certainty. That is my hang up in all of this is I think that this is a conversation. Like, I mean, how much time do we have? You know what Sean Clifford's ceiling is. You know that the floor is lifted. I don't know what Drew Aller is. I think that he's really, really good. I think that he has a lot more to learn and that as this process goes along, he will get there. But I just haven't seen enough to know. I'm not arguing for or against. I don't know.
Yeah. We will get to my thoughts here in just one second. But first, do you have a problem sleeping? Do you have issues with anxiety or pain? If you do, I've got some people that can help you out. And I know this because they've helped me out with several of those things. And that's our friends at Rogue Shop. Rogue Shop is a completely natural, holistic way to treat a lot of common ailments in modern America and modern medicine. I am staring at two 27-inch screens down a camera barrel with three lights around me. I am overstimulated. It is 8:48 at night, and I'm going to have to go to bed in like an hour and a half. I don't do well in these environments. But what happens is I have some help, and that is the CBD gummies over at Rogue Shop. You take the appropriate amount, and then you fall asleep, and you stay asleep. You feel rested. You get up, and you're able to actually function the next day. So you can work another 12 hours. So you can go in and put in another long day at work. If you want to try all of these things, use the promo code BWI for 10% off at Rogue Shop. That's rogueshop.com, R-O-G-U-E, shop.com. They also have tinctures. I talk a lot about the gummies because those are what I use for sleep medication. But the tinctures take 30 minutes to 1 hour to effect. They last the same amount of time as the gummies, and they are a full body. They affect the full body. So inflammation, if you have chronic inflammation, which is the leading cause of disease, is just chronic inflammation. These can help you out, can help change your life. So check it out. Promo code BWI for 10% off at rogueshop.com. Okay. And if you're somebody who's very anxious and angsty about Sean Clifford, then you might want to try that out.
I'm not either of those things. What do you got for me, T. Frank? Let's go.
So he was a passenger last week or last mm-hmm. Saturday. Like mm-hmm. he threw the ball 20 times. They ran the ball 31 times in the second half. So his decision making pre-snap, that is one thing. But in terms of his play after the snap, he went 3 for 10. So the damage is limited, but he went 3 for 10. Mm-hmm. And they weren't particularly pretty. And they are consistent problems that have plagued him throughout his career. So if you're tired of watching those things and you would say, okay, even if Drew Aller isn't Sean Clifford, at least we know we're not going to get a hop pass in the third quarter where he's throwing midair. And I understand that particular part of it because there are certain things he's just not capable of doing. You and I talk about the third wide receiver. Mitchell Tinsley was open mm-hmm. for a 47-yard pass at a minimum. He had a step and a half on the DB, and the ball went 5 yards over his head.
Mm-hmm.
So the explosiveness of the offense, we're talking about what's up with Keandre Lambert-Smith. That is true, and I'm not trying to take away from that, but it's not like Parker Washington didn't get open. And Mitchell Tinsley didn't get open, and those plays weren't there to be made in a game where your defense, going back to that, your defense needs something. Give mm-hmm. them something. And it just wasn't there. And I'm very frustrated watching it because it's like, these are not hard things to see.
Yep.
In a clean pocket, if you've got pressure from your left, and I'm not saying I can do this, and that's always the problem. Is like, well, you can't do it. You never played. It's like, yeah, but thousands of other quarterbacks have played, and hundreds of them have sidestepped to the right as they always do in practice, as they always do in drills, and then they throw that ball from an even platform. When you come off your first read, don't immediately tuck and run from a clean pocket. Just turn and look at the backside progression. This is the conversation. These are not sixth year quarterback problems. He's not trying to see if like they have an inverted cloud three and knowing where the safeties are that they've rolled down into a look he's never seen before. It's basic stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, if Nick Singleton's going to freshman and he has a bad day, Abdul Carter's going to freshman and he has a bad day, and Drew Aller freshmans and he has a bad day, you know, that's the risk that you're going with. You can't have your quarterback have a bad day freshmaning on the field.
Yeah,
but I'm seeing a lot of freshmaning, I guess, it feels like.
Did he do that against Auburn?
He didn't do much against Auburn. And no, he did not. He had the same amount of pressures and went 2 for 3 instead of 1 for 5.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that there are a lot of questions. I don't think it's simple. realistically. No. I think that he tends to revert to bad habits when things, I don't even know if it's things aren't going his way. What's in your opinion, what is the consistency for when that happens? What's the situation when he does that? Or is it just all the time? Is it just that that's who he is? And those are the things that he does. And he never does the alternative, because
no,
it doesn't seem to me as though that's true.
So, okay. Part of this is I understand him playing. I understand he's operating the offense better and understands at a deeper level than I understand the offense. And you know, being the manager of that group of people. So that is something that I'm completely ignoring. And that is part of this calculus. But I guess I'm just expressing the frustration that people have. Mm-hmm. And I understand it completely. There is no consistency. Because you're right. There are times he sidesteps in the pocket and he throws the ball correctly, like I just described. And usually it's when he has an avenue to a running lane and he's able to get through the pocket. But I could not sit here and tell you X happens and then he does this, other than he gets pressure in his face and that's bad. Mm-hmm. And that's something he does not recover from. But in a clean pocket, he does it too. And it just seems to be that when things compound, I guess that's the thing. When things compound and there's more than one issue that he has to deal with at a time, that's when he seems to struggle. The rain, pressure.
Running game, not
running game. Yeah. Right. But there have been other games where he played, you know, reasonably well. Iowa, even the Purdue game at the end, the 2-minute drive that, you know, saved them from all the things we just described. So I can't really give you the whole conversation because I would have to replay everything. Like, you've got to go through and categorize it because it's so scattershot. Let's see what we have here. Steven says,
Nico, here, I got the question for you.
Okay. What's the question?
Thanks, Steven, for Kent. Will Levis is now a round one draft name being tossed around. Kentucky was a system that worked for him. Does the Penn State system work for Cliff? Or would he have been a better quarterback elsewhere, like Levis is at Kentucky?
No. Because the things that... So here's the thing. Sean Clifford is a college quarterback, so he has college quarterback issues. Bo Nix is the same thing. Who's the kid from South... Graham Mertz, the kid from South Carolina that was a hot shot at one point, that was a five-star recruit. If you don't handle pressure, you don't handle pressure. So that's one thing. And also, and I was trying to pull up Will Levis's stats right now. Will Levis is not playing well this year. Will Levis played well last year, but he is a boomer bust prospect that throws the ball well deep, but also has accuracy issues and can be erratic himself. So I'm not saying he's not better than Sean Clifford, because I do think he is better than Sean Clifford. But if we're going to re-adjudicate all this stuff, nobody knew that he was going to be that good. Nobody. I mean, Will Levis and his mom knew that he was going to be that good, but that he showed very few signs of that at Penn State. So the conversation, if Will Levis was magically the starting quarterback for Penn State with Nick Singleton, would they be a great team? Yes, they would be a great team. Would he throw interceptions that make you furious at him? Yes. I don't know how to square that for you any other way in terms of Will Levis.
Well, and
he's a first round pick because he's got the skills.
I think that the question is also, would Sean Clifford be a better quarterback at Wisconsin or whatever, or Kentucky? They're running that
offense this year. They are Wisconsin this year. They run the ball to set up the pass. They have play action passes. They throw in RPOs and read options. He's not asked to run the ball a terrible amount of times. Like, they're not even running a ton of read options where teams are giving him the green light all the time. I think he'd be the same guy in that offense that he is here, because here's the thing. When it's 3rd and 7, you've got to throw the football. Doesn't matter. You're never going to be in a perfect situation where your offense is so good that you are going to avoid every 3rd and 7. And I said this a couple weeks ago. I feel like Sean Clifford sets up 3rd and 7 could be the biography of my time covering Penn State, because it's been the entirety of it, it feels like. So I don't know.
Yeah, I have nothing for you there. I I'll be very interested to see how he plays at Michigan, because I think it will be considerably better than it was the past 2 weeks.
Yes, it very well could be.
I do also think that, which never gets credit because they lose these games or have lost these games more than they've won them in recent years, but Sean Clifford is a little bit of a gamer, right? Like I think he actually shows up better in a lot of instances than he's given credit for against better teams. They've just happened to lose those games in recent memory, because guess what? Auburn was the best game of his life last year. Right. Ohio State wasn't far off outside of the strip sack. He was lights out that game.
There's a perfect example of a game. Thank you. There's a perfect example of a game where he managed pressure so much better that he was able to command the pocket better, read the defense. He threw with anticipation in that game. He threw down the field in between defenders and was moving the offense. Last year, I was rooting for him to turn the corner, by the way.
Yep.
I came on here after, I think it was the Auburn game, and I said, we now have the Villanova game and the Auburn game, and I know it's Villanova, but like legitimate quarterbacking from Sean Clifford, where he has put it together multiple games of throwing good deep balls and being on point. But he just can't ever seem to turn that corner. And at this point, like, you know, it's strap in, because that's going to be what it's going to be for the next 2 months. But that's going to be it for today.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where that takes them. I don't know. I'm not putting a ceiling on this group, because I do think that they have more avenues to winning than they did last year. And I thought that they were competitive throughout last year and really have, you know, in some ways a similar identity, but not. Because the defense is more opportunistic than it was last year. And the offense, while not consistent in hitting home runs, has the ability to do so.
Yeah.
They do need to get a field stretching third receiver. That has to happen, because Keandre Lambert-Smith does not look like he'll be back, to me, in 2 weeks. But we'll see.
That didn't look good. You know what, Nate? This is what happens when you speak through emotion. I don't feel like I nailed that Sean Clifford conversation, because there's so much more interesting nuance to it. There's so much more to it than that, but I think you summed it up great for us there, and I appreciate you saving it there at the last possible second. So kudos to you for keeping us at our 17-7.
Kent just paid to have me say this. Sean Clifford continues to be like otherworldly in letting this stuff slide off of him. I think that he is deeply aware of what the perception is at this point. And he, like, you could not ask for a better leader in terms of just drowning it out, just not letting it dictate who he is as a person or what his performances are. And that's, you know, to a certain extent, you have to respect that. I respect the heck out of it. So we'll see.
Certainly skills that I think all of us could use. And, you know, someday I'll be paying Sean Clifford on a seminar for leadership and how to not hear people.
While we read the comments in YouTube telling us how horrible we are, people hate my background. It's a great background.
It's a nice shiplap wall, and it's real.
Let it go.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow with the recruiting show on the BWI Daily Edition. Thank you to everyone who participated. We had a great conversation. Nate, as always, I love talking football with you. I love laughing on this show so much. I sound like an old lady. I just love laughing so much, but this is genuinely the most entertaining hour of my time in the week. And I appreciate you coming on and doing it with me.
Thanks so much for having me, buddy.
That'll do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. It's the bye week, so we get into a lot of interesting stuff. Stay tuned and subscribe.